If you have a Bible, we're going to be in the Old Testament book of Joshua chapter 3. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Tim. I'm glad you're with us, and I'm excited about this story. This is a really good story. Let me give you a quick recap. If you are joining us for the first time, you're dropping in the middle of a series. So here's where we've been. 2 weeks ago, we started a new series that we're calling History Repeats. And really the idea behind the series is, it's a question we ask a lot, is does history have to repeat? Are we doomed to repeat the same old cycles of whatever it is we inherited from our parents? Or maybe it's just like life just feels like it's on replay week after week after week. You go to work, you get up, you have coffee, you go to work, you come home, you watch Netflix, you go to bed, and you do it all over again the next day. Does history have to repeat, or can people change? And especially when it comes to like the big things, are we doomed to repeat the same old mistakes that we've repeated in the past? That's the question. So 2 weeks ago, we started with the story of Jesus getting baptized by his cousin John in the river, the Jordan River. And one of the questions we asked that then was, okay, why are people letting John dunk them in the water? Especially when you read the description of John. John doesn't seem like necessarily a stable guy. He's wearing camel hair, which he holds together with a leather belt. I don't know why that detail matters, but they make sure we know it. And he's eating bugs, and he's shouting things about the end of the world. And not only are people letting him hold them underwater, but they're letting John, like they're lining up for John to do it. And so we asked the question, well, why? And that led us on, well, we looked at like an ancient cult, and we went into caves, and we looked at a copper scroll, which was a treasure map. You kind of had to be here, but that was 2 weeks ago. Really, we said that, like, if you boil it all down, most likely the reason people are lining up for John to baptize them is John's preaching a message. The word he's using again and again is this word in Hebrew, it's teshuva. Teshuva, we translate it repent, although repent in the English language has all this other language, like, we've loaded a bunch of other ideas onto that word, but in the Jewish language, the idea behind the idea behind teshuva is you're walking a path, you find yourself off of the path. Teshuva is to turn and to return to the path. And so John is saying, hey, people can change. You can change. And this crowd is just desperate for that message. And I, as I've been putting this whole series together and thinking about this series, I just have to imagine that there's some of us in the room. I've definitely gone through these seasons where you're just desperate to actually hear that today does not need to be a replay of yesterday. Things can change. Last weekend, I had the opportunity to spend some time with my family by a body of water, which is like the best in the summer. And so I was showing my kids how you can take an inflatable ball and you can hold it under the water, and if you let go, it like shoots into the air. Have you done this? Right? It's not as easy as it looks. And my 3-year-old daughter, she wanted to try it, and she couldn't get it under. She had her whole body on it once, and then she kind of flipped over and went under. It just takes a lot of work to hold a ball underwater. And I'll follow the metaphor, but I think for a lot of us, it feels like we have this thing, this secret, this problem, this habit, this thing we did, whatever it is. And it's like we're trying to hold this thing under the water, and we're getting exhausted. And for some of us, the thing feels so big that it's like we try, can't even get our hands around it, so we find ourselves like flipping over. Do you follow the metaphor? John, why are they lining up for John? You can change. You can let go. Now, that's scary. And the thing that's really scary is when we let go, it comes shooting up out of the water. And now, like, okay, what's that going to do to us? So that's scary. So what we said a couple weeks ago is let's just start by naming it, by confronting it, by saying, okay, this is a thing. Before we do anything else with it, let's just start by confronting it and naming it and saying, this is a thing. Then last week, I'm so grateful for Pastor Tierra. Last week, Tierra led us in kind of where the same location, but where like 1,500 years earlier. So John is dunking in the Jordan River. 1,500 years before that, there is a man named Joshua who's leading the Israelite people out of the desert and into the promised land. So why is John dunking in the Jordan River? Most likely because the people have gone off the course and he's calling them back to kind of when they first stepped into the land. But I appreciate Tierra's message because if you were here, if you weren't, I'll fill you in. She shared with us that Joshua, when we meet him, he's kind of a nobody. Like he's not a hero in the scriptures. He's, in fact, he's described as a servant of the Lord. So Moses has been the hero. Moses, by the way, I like the Dwight Schrute joke. That was classic. The assistant to the assistant regional manager. He's just the assistant to the assistant. It's Moses who's the hero. Joshua, when he shows up on the scene, Joshua's just a dude. And in fact, his job is he's like a bouncer outside of the tent. Moses goes into the tent and meets with God, but Joshua is just outside the tent. And Joshua is always referred to as Joshua, son of Nun, his dad. Like, he's always referred to as, you almost get the sense of like, hey, if you talk to Joshua, which Joshua? Oh, you know, Nun's boy. Oh, yeah. And so what I really appreciate about that message is, so it starts by confronting it. It starts by naming it. But here's what happens. When you let go of this thing, and we'll talk about that, but when you let go of it, it comes shooting up out of the water. And if it could go well, there is a chance that when you confess the thing, when you share the thing, when you tell them about the thing, that it's not as big of a deal as you've been thinking it would be. But there is also a chance that when you tell the thing, when you confess the thing, there is a chance that they don't understand. There is a chance that they start telling other people and that creates its own. There is a chance that it doesn't go well. And we have to put our identity not in the conclude, like however this thing turns out. We have to put our identity in the simple fact that you are a son, you are a daughter of the living God, and that's enough. Nobody can take that from you. So what I want to do this morning is I want to pick up there, and Joshua, so Tiara got us right to the edge of the water. Joshua's got the Israelite people behind him, and he's about to step into the promised land, 40 years in the desert, stepping into the destiny that is before the people, the land God had promised them. And that story is in Joshua chapter 3, if you want to follow along. This is verse 1. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. Now, let's just pause there. Let's get a couple of details out of the way right away. First, we're given a location of where the people are. Now, I know I sound a little bit like a broken record in this, if you've been here for a while, but whenever you're given a location, it's really a good idea to pull out a map. Where does this happen? Now, let me show you where this city is on a map. If you notice, the arrow is just on the other side of the Jordan from where we were last week. Jesus gets baptized on this side of the Jordan. It's on the other side. So they're going to enter in here. It's the same spot, the exact same spot. Often we have to go back to places. Often we have to go back and actually confront it. Second thing we should just address on the top end is, we read that Joshua is with all the Israelites, all the Israelites. Now, how many people are we talking about here? This is when you think about this story, when you've read this story or heard the story, or maybe it's for the first time you're hearing it, like, how many people are we assuming are part of this pack of Israelites? Hundreds? Thousands? Anyone want to wager a guess? A million?
3 million.
3 million? Who said that? Bob, I would come down and shake your hand, but you're always right. So, here's what we know. In the book of Numbers, specifically chapter 26, in the book of Numbers, we are given a census. They take a census because there are type A people in every group. You know, you can't just be like, it's a lot of people. They're like, no, how many pizzas are we going to order from Costco? I don't know, count them. So, they take a census. Now, in the census, they count the people, and the exact number of men above the age of 20 is 601,730 men above the age of 20. Now, that's not including the entire tribe of Levi. So 1/12 of the men aren't counted in the census. Why? I don't know. We still haven't been able to figure out who gets counted in a census. They're not counted. Now, 601,730 men over the age of 20. So if you, our best guess is if you were to add the children, if you were to add the Levites, we are looking at somewhere between 2.5 million and 3 million. Bob, always ask Bob. 2.5 to 3 million people. That's about the size of Chicago. So I don't know what your mental image was, but that's a lot of people who are hanging out at the edge of a river. Back to the story. Verse 2. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the Levitical priest carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and you are to follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and the ark. Do not go near it. Now, pause again. We don't count in cubits, so so we're on the same page. Who's got a Bible? How much is 2,000 cubits? It should be an asterisk. What? 1,000 yards, 3,000 feet, 1,000 yards. Now, 1,000 yards, 3,000 feet. Let me put this in language I understand. That's roughly 10 football fields. I try to break everything down into football fields. That's 10 football fields. Or technically, a football field has the end zones, which are, for those of you who are like, it's not actually. Yeah, there's like 10 yards in the end zone, so it's technically like 8.23. I did the math. Why am I telling you this? I don't know. It's a long distance, and I really miss football, but it's a long distance. God says, I will go out ahead, bring the ark ahead, but you hang out 10 football fields. And you know, then you may come in. So that's what we got going on. Now, verse 5. Joshua told the people, consecrate yourself for tomorrow. So prepare yourself, dedicate yourself. For tomorrow, the Lord will do amazing things among you. I was reading through Pastor Scott Pontier, who's here this morning, his message on this same passage. And he said something along the lines of, what we do today affects what we do tomorrow. And Joshua gets that. He says, hey, prepare yourself, because tomorrow God is going to do something. What you do today affects tomorrow. Joshua said to the priests, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and they went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. Now, pause there. Why should they step in? God told them to, right? Why should they step in? Reason number one, God says to Joshua, tell the priest, I'm telling you to have them step into the river. The priests are to step into the river. That's reason number one. Reason number two, why they should step into the river. Because God told them to. Number one, God told them to. Number two, God told them to. However, there are some reasons why they might give pause to stepping into the river. Let me give you four reasons why these priests, when Joshua says, hey, step into the river, God said so, four reasons why they may give pause. Number one, for you note takers. Number one, Joshua is new on the job. How do they know that God is actually speaking to him? He's new. God has worked with Moses. They've seen God move through Moses. They saw Moses strike a river or the sea and it parted. But how do they know that Joshua is not just making it all up? Reason number one. Number two, these are not water people. We've said this before, but to the Jewish people at large, water represents things like chaos and evil and death and destruction and demogorgons and all like the bad stuff. To Jewish people, demogorgons?
Yeah.
You watch it? Yeah, there you go. The rest of you are like, you know, good, Google it. Demogorgon. To the rest of the people, like the water, like you don't touch the water. These particular Israelites are absolutely not water people. They've lived 40 days in the desert or 40 years in the desert. They would enjoy water as much as you would enjoy 40 years in the desert. I mean, they're desert people. So reason number two, they're not water people. Reason number three, they are carrying the ark. They are carrying the ark. God says, I will dwell amongst the people in a box. Build for me a box, and I will dwell amongst you, you Israelite people, in the box. Now, this particular box is a really big deal. You do not want to step into the river and drop the box. God says, I will dwell amongst the people in the box. There's a story recorded later in the Bible of a guy named Uzzah, and Uzzah sees the ark. It's on a cart, and the ark is tipping, and it's about to fall off the cart. And so Uzzah says, I'll be the hero. And he goes to put it back on the cart. He touches the ark, and he falls down dead on the spot. You don't want to be the guy that drops that thing. You've seen Indiana Jones, right? Nazis melt when they see the ark. You don't want to touch the ark. So you are told by God, like, okay, I got to step. You're told by Joshua, God told me that to have you step into the river. Why should you give pause? Well, because you're carrying really important cargo here. Number four, last reason. Number four, verse 15, if you keep reading. Verse 15, we learn that the time of the year that the story takes place is the rainy season, and the river is at flood stage. Now, why does this matter? Because if you've been to Israel and you've seen the Jordan River, most of the year it looks something like this. Not a great picture, but it's not very deep. You can just kind of walk across. I don't care how scared of water you are, you can kind of just walk across most of the year. However, for a couple of months out of the year, it rains in Israel. It rains in the desert, and it rains hard. Now, when we think of desert, we often think of the Sahara, sandy desert. But that's not the desert in Israel. The desert's not sandy desert. The desert is rock. In particular, it's limestone. Now, when it rains on limestone, limestone cannot absorb the water. So it kind of collects for a while, and then it comes rushing down in flash floods. Now, water has to follow the rules of gravity. And so water looks for the lowest possible point. The lowest possible point is the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is fed through a trench, a river known as the Jordan River. So the Jordan River, for a couple months out of the year, becomes, it moves from this to something like this. Check this out. You're carrying the presence of God. You don't like water. You don't know Joshua. And he says, step into this. Here's the thing. If Joshua's wrong and the river doesn't part, you're probably going to drown to death. If Joshua's wrong and it doesn't part and you don't drown to death, most likely you're going to drop the ark, and we saw how that turned out. These are the reasons why you might give pause. Now, I suspect that Joshua sees what's going on in the look of the priests as they're trying to wrestle through, do we do it or do we not do it? Because notice what Joshua says. Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. Reason number 5, why you may not want to step foot into the river or why you may give pause before stepping in if you're one of these priests who are to walk 10 football fields ahead. Reason number 5, there are 7 tribes of people. These people are not known as being nice people. 7 tribes of people, the Ites here, the Canaanites, Hivites, Perizzites, they want you dead. They see 3 million refugees lining up at their border and they say, not on our watch. They want you dead. And so I imagine, by the way, the chapter before this, 7 times God says to Joshua, be strong and courageous. Why does he have to tell Joshua that so many times? I imagine he sees, not only is the river at flood stage, he sees armies of people who are saying, not on our watch, not on our watch. Do they have swords? Do they have spears? Story continues. Joshua's speech continues. See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, 1 from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot, by the way, he's got to remind them that God is not just the God of the desert. We'll talk about that again in 2 weeks. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, 1 from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. So Joshua essentially says, don't worry, this box is not an ordinary box. God will stop the waters. Which now this brings us to the moment in the story. Okay, so if you've been on autopilot, the moment, come back. Shake the mouse, wake back up. Verse 14. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priest carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. Yet, as soon as the priests who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap at a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowing down to the Sea of Arabah, that is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. That's an incredible story, isn't it? It's a good story. But first they have to take the step. Let's talk about the step. I want to give you 3 observations about taking the first step. Because here we read that the people of God moved from the desert to the promised land, the land that God has promised them. But it took the first step. Someone had to take the first step. So let's talk about the first step. Here's three observations. Observation number one, the first step always requires a certain level of risk. Or perhaps you could say it this way. The first step is wet. You catch this in the story that, let me read the line again, verse 15. Yet as soon as the priest who carried the ark, that's helpful. As soon as the priest who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, God parts the river, but it's not until they put their foot in. Did you catch that? This is where we get the phrase, you've got to get your feet wet. The first step, you don't know. You don't know. See, I think what we often do is we wait. We find ourselves the desert behind us, like, okay, I can't go back. But in front of us, it feels like there's a rushing river. And so we find ourselves at the bank of the river waiting and praying that God would part the river. And we find ourselves saying things like, I'm just waiting on God. I'm waiting for God to show me the path or to part the river. I think for a lot of us, we stand at the border of our destiny and we are told to take a step in, but we find ourselves saying to God, you move first. When God says to us, I need you to step first. I need to see that you're willing, that you can put your faith in me. But the step is terrifying. For those of you who's like, don't treat this trivially, I'm with you. I don't want to treat this trivially. If you've been in a position where you've recognized that there was a conversation you needed to have, there was a friend you needed to confront, there was a secret that you can't keep the ball under, that first step is terrifying. Because it could part, or you may walk in and it may not. But when you're desperate, you'll do it, right? So I've been working on this message, but I also been working on a couple of series ahead. So late fall, early winter, we'll be doing a series on rhythms and life rythms. For me, it's been huge. But I've been doing some like researching on it and self-reflection and just praying through that series. And it's forced me to kind of think through a season in my life where I felt like I stood up against a river. And just going back there has been... it's brought up all this old stuff, right? All this stuff that I thought was like down in there, kind of coming back up to the surface. There was a season in my life. I was about 2 years into ministry, and I was working really hard because I wanted to start well. And just a couple of years into ministry, and the church I was serving, unbelievable people, just a great, great church. But the church I was serving had two morning services and an evening service. And so many Sundays, what would happen is you would show up to the morning services and you would do the sermon and you would kind of pour your heart out. And then this kind of happens still, right? Then you kind of like collect it again and you go and you do it again. And most of the time, if it's like a teaching sermon, those are life-giving. But every once in a while, you're going into some really hard stuff and it's like, you pour yourself out, and you try to quick collect yourself, and then you pour yourself out again, and you don't have the time to say, God, can you fill me back up? So we had two of those, and then we had an evening service. And so what would often happen is I would find myself driving home, and I would power nap, because I have to wake up, and I've got to reflect on kind of the evening message, and then I've got to go put my suit back on, and I'm going back to church, and I'm doing the evening message. And early on, I had all these things, all these sermons like built up that I was like, seminary had taught me all this cool stuff and I get to share all this information. And about 2 years in, 3 years in, I found myself, if you're a pastor, you never want to be in this place. I found myself driving in and saying, I do not want to be with these people this night. What I want to be doing is I want to be hanging out at my house. What I want to be doing is I want to be hanging out with the kids in the backyard. What I want to be doing is something else. I do not want to be going and preaching another sermon, especially in the evening where I'm spent. And I found myself, but you still got to do it, right? You still got to go. And I found myself just kind of going through the motions of it. I have a vivid memory of a meeting with a group of pastors, and I was kind of like talking through this. They were older pastors. And I was reflecting on some of this, and most of the pastors were really like gracious, and they were really helpful in their advice. But there was one pastor who was what I caught in this pastor was cynicism, Like, he was really cynical. He was just like, oh yeah, the people. And the worst is, like, when they don't ever change, like, why even go through the motions? Because you go give the sermon and then they'll just never change. Like, people don't change. And I had this sense, like, oh, you think they're dumber than you. You think, like, how do you do it if you don't love the people? But at the same time, I noticed in my own heart a subtle resentment. And I had this moment where I realized, I just can't keep going on like this. Like, this is leading nowhere good, and it's going really, really fast. I was going to every dinner party that I was invited to. I was answering text messages at 10 o'clock in the evening. Like, I was doing it. I was writing sermons on my weekends. I wish I could say I changed all that, and now, like, I'm still working on a lot of that stuff, but I'm a natural pleaser, and I just recognized that I was at the edge and realized, like, the rhythms of my life is, like, this is not sustainable. I'm going to burn out fast. But at the same time, I realized if I step in, maybe you're in your job and it's, like, very similar. It's like, yeah, I need to do something. I got to tell the boss I can't work that day. I need a day off or whatever it is. But I also realized if I have, like, if I decide to make a change, a healthy change, a necessary change, a couple things could happen. One, they may not understand it. I mean, the risk is you make a change, people don't understand it. People think that you no longer care. Or the worst is people think you don't care about them. Or worse than that, they don't think they're worthy of care. Does this make sense? So you have all this, like, how do I do it? I could step in and it may not part. But for me, here's a question that I found myself asking is, am I comfortable? Because if nothing changes, nothing changes, right? You know this. Right now, if nothing changes in your life, nothing changes. And I found myself in the spot of, is this the life I want to be living in 5 years? Is this the life I want to be living in 10 years? Is this the life I want to be living in 20 years? Something's got to change. But the first step is what? You can stand at the, maybe you found yourself standing at the edge of the river crying out to God, God, would you part it? Would you part it? Would you part it? And maybe it's just, the time to take the step. Choosing to trust that God is bigger and better. First observation, second observation, and I'll go quick. Second observation. I would say this is one about leadership. Maybe you go to work and people look up to you. People report to you. Maybe you have someone in your life who's trying to, like, watch you to figure out how to live their life. Maybe you have little eyes at home. Okay, leadership. There's an important lesson about leadership in this story. See, you read the story and you come to this moment where they step in and the water parts. And often we can stop the story there, but notice what comes next in the story. If you keep reading. Verse 17 says, the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground while all of Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. I might say it like this. Leaders, those of you who are leaders, and if you have kids, you don't get a choice. You made the choice already. You're a leader. Those of you who are leaders, leaders have to take the first step. And we also have to take the last step. Parents, take the first step. We show our kids how to trust God. We show our kids how to put your faith in God. And we take the last step. We wait for them to cross through. We watch as they cross through. We make sure they're okay as they cross through. So what you understand in the story is everyone who passes through the Jordan, every single Israelite, all 3 million of them, they all have faith. But there are different degrees of faith. It takes less faith if you're 10 football fields away watching people pass through and, like, okay, they're okay, they're okay, they're okay, they're okay, they're okay. I think I'll be okay. That takes less faith than the person who has to take the first step in. They all have faith, but there's different degrees of faith. And I would say if you've been placed in a position of leadership, and again, if you're a parent, you don't have the choice. You are a leader. If you've been placed in a position of leadership at work, at your school, if you've been placed in a position of leadership, leaders go first. We have to model it. And that's asking a lot. And we go last. Last observation. This one you have to visualize. So there are 3 million people. There are a handful of leaders chosen to carry the ark. Joshua says, you guys walk ahead. How far should we walk ahead? 10 football fields or so. Why do we have to walk so far ahead? Why? So you picture it. 3 million people waiting. They're walking ahead. Why do we have to walk so far ahead? Here's the assumption I've always made. God needs to go far ahead because God is holy, which is true. God needs to go far ahead. This is the assumption. God needs to go way ahead of the people because God is holy and God needs to stand at a distance from the people, which is not true. So God is holy, but that God needs to go, because what you discover when you read the story, we just read the verses, is that the people will pass by God. But I had always assumed that it's because they can't be too close to God. What you discover in the story is, okay, it's a kind of, the last point, leaders go first and they go last, is partially true. How is it that leaders move? God goes first, and God goes last. That's the story. In fact, that's every story. If you pick up the scriptures and you read, that's every single story. That's not just the scripture stories. That's Denise's story. That's Mike's story. That's every one of you who have taken a step of faith. I mean, I watched Holly on the stage for VBS. It's Holly's story. Like, we trust that God goes first, and God goes behind us. God goes first, and God goes last. Psalm 23, David writes a psalm, King David writes a psalm, and he says, he leads me to still waters. He's ahead of me, leading me to green pastures. When life is clicking along well, God is way out front showing us the direction. But then there are the seasons where life seems to fall apart. He leads me to still waters. He leads me to green pastures. And then, if you notice the transition in the language in the psalm? When I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you are with me. Let me say it like this. Some of us are in a spot right now where life is going well, and you look ahead and you see, I see where God's going. That's where I got to go. It's been very clear. God said, do this, so I'm going to do this, and I'm going to take the step, and it's a risky step. And yet, I saw God part a sea with Moses. I think he'll part this river. I think I'll be okay. Some of you have seen God move way ahead, and so that the next step is, oh yeah, I'll just do what I've seen God do. I trust him. Others of you find yourself right now in a spot where you're in the shadow of the valley of the shadow of death. You're in death's valley. And it's hard to see where God is. Perhaps it's because you are looking here where God has moved here. And that is the story of everyone in the scriptures. But not just everyone in the scriptures. That is the story of every person of faith I've ever met. But I will, don't take my word for it. I want to show you a video. So in preparation for baptism that's coming up, we filmed a bunch of videos a while back, and we were only looking to show one video, but hearing the testimonies of people were so powerful that after we kept getting them back, we said, we just got to show a bunch of these things. And so I want to show you a video this morning of real people who have found themselves in the valley and met a very real God. And then... here's the video.